This is the Canadian Taxpayers Federation podcast, where we are fighting for lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable, smaller government. I'm Chris Sims. I'm the Alberta director here for the CTF. I'm here with two of my very good friends, Franco Terrazano. Franco is sentenced. He's the federal director, so he's living in Mordor, also known as Ottawa. Sorry, dude. Gage is here in God's country. He's next door. He's our prairie director. He's in Saskatchewan. Okay, guys, we've got a lot to cover here. It's been super busy ever since, frankly, former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he was going to resign. It's been like trying to work in the middle of a tornado. So election dust has settled. We know where we're at. We're now looking at some of the new data that we're getting on things like firearms ownership. Okay. And in particular, what Canadians think the best approach is to fighting actual gun crime. Should we go after the bad guys smuggling guns across the border? Or should we go after the legal law-abiding firearms owners? Who wants to take this one first, 12-gauge or Franco?
Well, I can start off with it because the long and the short of it is that the majority of Canadians don't think that Ottawa's gun ban is going to work. So to set the stage a little bit, back in 2020, you know, 5 years ago, the government stood up and said, we're going to ban thousands of different makes and models of firearms to make Canadians safer, right? So you look at that on the surface, doesn't sound as bad. But then you look at the data since then, and gun crime has actually increased. So at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, in partnership with Leger, we commissioned a poll to ask Canadians, since this gun crime has increased, what do you actually think is the most effective way to reduce gun crime in Canada and make people safer? Is it A, stopping all the illegal guns coming over from the United States? Or is it B, banning a bunch of guns from licensed Canadian firearm owners? And Canadians, I think, rightly seeing that gun crime increase, a majority of them decided and said that stopping illegal gun smuggling across the border is much more effective than taking guns away from law-abiding Canadians.
Franco, were you surprised by these stats?
Well, I don't know. You know, the magnitude of the gap between those two results are huge, right? Like from a margin of more than 2-1, Canadians said like, maybe just go after the illegal gun smugglers, not the law abiding Canadian citizens. So that's a pretty big gap. And I'm happy to hear that. And, you know, that answer is actually what the actual experts are saying, right? So Canadians and both the experts, like the police associations, are both saying the same thing. Like the issue is not law-abiding Canadian citizens, law-abiding owners. The issue is the fact that you got a bunch of illegal criminal activity and guns going across the border, especially from the United States. And like, I can't believe I have to say this out loud with my mouth, but I'm pretty sure criminals aren't going to walk into government offices and hand over their illegal guns. You know what I mean? Like, let me just read you a quote that I have from the Toronto Police Association, okay? Quote, okay. There is no evidence that gun bans are effective in reducing this violence, particularly when 85% of guns seized by our members can be traced back to the United States, right? And like, look, this is something that the Mounties Union has been talking about for quite some time. Like they have said, like, look, like the real issue is the illegal crime, the organized crime. And like the Mounties Union also said something that is very important. Not only will the gun ban and buyback or confiscation, I should say, not only will that not make Canada safer, it could actually do damage. Because you're redirecting scarce police resources away from cracking down on actual criminals to targeting law-abiding Canadian citizens.
Yeah, on that point, out here out west, Premier Danielle Smith has done two things very recently. She added the issue of legal firearms ownership to the Alberta Bill of Rights. So that was really nice to see. She
Jealous.
Also, yeah, that was pretty great. And then she also instructed through justice, basically saying, no, we're not wasting one nickel of taxpayers' money going through to police organizations so they can go door to door again to law-abiding firearms owners' homes saying, could you please hand over your firearms? She said, that's not on. It's just not happening. It's a huge waste of money. And it's also an attack on Alberta culture. Gage, I found it interesting that out here out west, it was slightly higher people saying, you know what? No, don't go after law-abiding firearms owners. Go after the criminals and the gun smugglers. I guess I shouldn't be really surprised. Our rate of firearm ownership is the highest in Alberta and Saskatchewan.
Well, I think that just makes sense, right? When you grow up on a farm, or even in Calgary, you just have guns in the basement, you realize that it's just more of a tool to have fun and get some deer to fill your freezer out. It's nothing crazy. You know, when you grow up around these things, safety is the number one priority, and everybody does that every day. So it's ludicrous to be targeted by the federal government for something that, when you think about your neighbors and your family members who have firearms, aren't doing anything crazy with them. They're respecting the law because they had to respect the law to get the guns in the first place. And I think that goes to Franco's point as well, where he talks about how it's crazy to expect a criminal to walk into a government office and hand over his illegal gun. And that's super common sense, but it's also exactly what the academics are saying, right? So there's even University of Toronto professors who say basically buyback programs or gun confiscations are largely ineffective at reducing gun violence because the people who participate in these programs are not likely to use the guns to commit violence. And as a firearms owner myself and a person who knows a bunch of firearms owners, that makes exact sense. That's, we use the guns as a tool for fun. We aren't doing these illegal things that the illegal guns are happening with. But I think another point that Franco made is super important is talking about the cost of police resources there, right? So the problem is when you have this gun ban, it's going to cost potentially billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to buy back these guns from Canadians and make none of them safer. And that's why we did this poll, to highlight that it's a clear example of government waste to spend billions of dollars on something that isn't going to work and hasn't been working because gun crime has increased since these guns have been banned.
Yeah, great point, Gage. And here out west, and I know there's lots of folks in Ontario, Northern Ontario, rural areas across Canada, frankly, who are firearms owners. It's just, it's a tool. Like, I was raised on hunted meat. It was just like having a chainsaw. Yeah, you don't let your kids play with it. You're super careful with it. Like, you have all these special rules. We're just re-watching the Mission Impossible series. And remember, if you both remember the movie, that opening scene at the very end of the movie when the guy's getting into the CIA headquarters and he has to go through, there's like a retinal scan. He has to like punch in a code. Like, if you want to be a firearms owner in Canada, you have got to go through a ton of government tests and jump through a whole bunch of hoops just to be able to own like a rifle or a shotgun. If you want to own a handgun in Canada, which is up in the air right now with this Liberal government, like, you're getting that retinal scan. And there's even certain things, like you have to be allowed to let law enforcement into your house without a warrant at any time. Like, there's some major restrictions on law-abiding firearms owners already. My point here is they're big on rules. They follow rules and laws to the nth degree. These are not the problem, folks, here, people. Franco, give us a little shred of hope. Like, is there any movement here with this kind of sort of new government? It's really just Carney that's changed. Any chance? I mean, I was listening to the King's speech, and he mentioned protecting the rights of hunters, if I recall the language he used. Is there a chance that they could let up on this and say, you know what, it's not worth the cost and not worth the headache?
Well, before I do that, I'm actually going to continue to be a rain cloud here, because okay. I want to talk more about the cost of this thing, because like, okay, not only is it ineffective, not only could it potentially make Canada less safe, but this is a boondoggle in the making. OK, so let me just go through the timeline of the cost of this gun ban and confiscation scheme. OK, so when the Liberals during the 2019 election, when they first announced their plans for this scheme, this boondoggle, they said, it'll cost like $200 million. Right. What's $200 million between friends? Well, it turns off they got the math a little bit wrong. OK, so it went from an initial estimate of about $200 million. To the PBO a couple of years later saying, well, it's actually probably more like $750 million. But even that doesn't account for the full cost, the biggest cost, the administration cost. The PBO just couldn't figure it out, didn't have the data. And then fast forward to today, and you have internal government documents suggesting that it will actually cost probably closer to $2 billion, right? So $200 million to $750 million. To $2 billion. But oh wait, even that price tag is likely low. You have independent analysis from the think tank, the Fraser Institute, that says, well, the cost could actually be as high as $6.7 billion. So yeah, The politicians got their math just slightly off. Now, folks, we're going to bring in a new segment of this little podcast, and I would like to get our listeners and our watchers in the comments section. Let us know, how much do you think Trudeau, or now I guess Carney's or the government's gun ban boondoggle, how much do you think it's going to cost? Do you think it's going to cost a couple hundred million? No. Do you think it's going to cost $2 billion, maybe $6.7 billion? Or how high do you think the cost for this gun confiscation scheme is going to go? Let us know. Write it in the comment section wherever you're listening it. I think it's going to be astronomical. And I'm laughing.
It will, because you have to laugh or you'll cry.
Oh,
I will
gosh.
I will point out, I do read the comments, right? And I was reading the comments on our last chit chat that we had, and some folks were saying, God, how could you people be laughing? Like, everything has gone to hell. I understand. Okay. I get it. Number one, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. Number two, we have to keep mocking the government and bureaucrats because they hate it. Okay, that's really one of our only weapons that we have here. And so we have to keep laughing at them. Also, just speaking personally, swallowing all the black pills all the time isn't good for you. So I'm the red pill lady. I will deliver you this information to make sure you stay awake and keep on fighting. I don't know where you guys are at on your pill color.
Yeah, it depends on the second of the day, really. But hey, let me just jump into this because you mentioned, like, where are we going forward? So, you know, in the speech from the throne that was delivered by the king, which sets out the government's priorities, right? The new government's priorities. The speech did make reference to respecting law-abiding Canadians. So I don't know, that gives a little bit of hope, or at least that tells me that there's a wedge issue, that if our supporters, Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters, are, you know, pounding away at these politicians saying, like, look, this is going to be very expensive and it's going to be ineffective, it won't keep Canadians safe, I think we can push the government on this fiasco in the right direction. But Gage, you've been following this a little bit closer than I have. Like, what are the official statements coming out of the government?
Yeah, well, Franco, that's where actually I'm a little hopeful also. And we're kind of seeing the pressure from Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters working. Because we go back to the last election, and on the debate stage, all three of the major federal party leaders, when the issues of firearms came up, they all mentioned that illegal guns coming across the border was a problem. And that's something you wouldn't have seen in the last couple elections, something they wanted to shy away from. So at least now you see that the government and all the people who wanted to be in charge of this country are at least acknowledging that it is a problem. And that's the next first step to try and push out. So if that's the real problem, that means we need to end this gun ban and buyback. But unfortunately, there has been no statement on saying they're not going to do it. They're just pushing on that hope thing. Because during election, Carney did say that he was going to continue with it and implement it, but it's not exactly sure when that's going to happen. You know, we've already been waiting 5 years for the government to try and do something on this. So we have to wait and see exactly what happens, but we'll be there to update you when it does.
Awesome. Well, I do see some little rays of light here and some hope. I will also remind our listeners and viewers, keep on the opposition. OK, because they're right now, they just finished a crazy long election campaign. Some of them are barely remembering their own names right now. OK, so they're regrouping. OK, and they're going through their kit bag saying, what are we going to keep fighting and what are we going to toss? Right. Make sure you stay on the opposition, stay on the Conservatives, keep emailing your member of parliament and say, hey, firearms ownership and getting rid of this confiscation and this ban is a really big voting issue for me. You better stay on this. They really do need that kind of direction, especially coming from their constituents. Speaking of bureaucrats wasting a heck ton of money, Franco, did we want to get into your 99 Luftballons of like red liberal bureaucrats that it's blown by?
Oh, so that's the reference. You were saying stuff, and as I normally do, I just like smile and nod and didn't really catch your reference.
You didn't catch my reference this morning when I started singing? Oh,
I just thought, that's probably funny. Okay, folks, well, the new data is in from the government, and over the last 10 years, the federal bureaucracy has ballooned by 99,000 extra government bureaucrats. So there are now 99,000 more federal bureaucrats than there were just 10 years ago. Now, a couple things that I want to point out. So I want to get into some of the biggest bloat in Ottawa in a second. But look, like one thing that stuck out to me is that there has been over the last year a very, very small cut in the number of bureaucrats, like less than 2.7% reduction in a year. But like that's not even close to enough. I mean, we're talking about 99,000 extra federal bureaucrats over the last decade, a cumulative increase of 38%. And if you want to talk about saving money, the only way to actually cut taxes and fix the books is to cut the number of bureaucrats. Because like, look, if the bureaucracy had only increased with population growth over the last 10 years, taxpayers would save $7 billion a year. A year. Okay. And look, it's not just the number of bureaucrats that has gotten out of control. The cost of the bureaucracy has gone up even faster. The cost of the bureaucracy has gone up 73% over the decade. 73%. Are any of you getting even close to 73% better services from the federal government? No, maybe 73% longer wait times trying to get the CRA on the phone, but definitely not 73% better services. So folks, not only are you paying for more bureaucrats, you're paying for more bureaucrats taking bigger pay.
Gage, you go ahead. I'm doing the math on that. Did you just say 7 billion? If we'd kept up with just population increase, taxpayers would say 7 billion per year.
I sure did.
Okay, give her Gage.
Well, Franco, I think if someone wanted to push back on you, they might say, okay, maybe they're not doing these leaps and bounds better, but maybe they're just meeting the goals they had a little bit better. Like they're hiring these people for a reason to do some sort of job. Are they doing that job?
Oh, that's so cute. look, like they're not even failing the Canadian Taxpayers Federation test. Like we're pretty, you know, we're hard. They're not even failing our tests. They're failing their own tests, right? So even the parliamentary budget officer pointed this out that within any given year, federal departments can barely meet half of their own performance targets. So you're paying for what? Tens of thousands of extra bureaucrats over the last number of years. You've paid for literally more than a million pay raises over the last 4 years. You're paying for hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses, okay? And then they write their own tests, their own performance targets, and they can barely pass it. They can barely pass their own tests. So the only thing that taxpayers are seeming to get out of this situation is a higher tax and a higher government debt bill.
So I did the math, and the $7 billion per year that we would save, that would cover the annual grocery bills for an average family of four. It would cover 437,000 families' grocery bills. Nearly 500,000 families' grocery bills could be covered with the amount of money they're just blowing on this particular form of government bloat. Unbelievable.
Gross. Can I just read you some of the departments? Because there's seven departments in 10 years, seven departments and agencies that have more than doubled the number of government bureaucrats. More than doubled. Okay, so let me just read you the top offenders here. Infrastructure Canada, the number of bureaucrats there increased by 375% since 2016. Yeah. Women and Gender Equality Canada, 334% increase.
Sorry.
How you feeling over there, Chris? You feeling better?
Great. I feel so represented. That's great.
Oh, good. Good. The RCMP External Review Committee, 229% increase. Elections Canada, 173% increase. The Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada, 158% increase. The Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, 154% increase. And the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada, 127% increase.
Sorry, what was that financial consumer thingy-mabob?
The Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, 154% increase over 10 years.
What the hell is that? Is that food inspection or something?
No, I have. I don't know. I'm sure. I'm sure the vast majority of Canadians probably know of one department, and that's like Global Affairs Canada, just because they waste all the money on sex toy shows around the world. But I mean, like, things are pretty bad. The silver lining is that there's so much fat in Ottawa, they could cut so much and Canadians would notice no impact to their daily lives. One last thing to point out before we jump on to another fun topic is like, look, Carney said that he wants to cap the government bureaucracy, but like, are you serious? Like, that's just entrenching the Trudeau government's out of control, overly expensive bureaucratic hiring spree. Like, that's nuts.
Cap it. You know, it's funny. I don't remember them door knocking on that issue. Weird. Like, weird. I know it's not good enough for us for them to cap it, but I don't remember the Liberals going door to door, especially in the boroughs of Ottawa, door knocking, say, hey, I'm going to freeze hiring in the bureaucracy. Don't remember that being top of mind.
But also, like, after you've just added like 100,000 bureaucrats in a decade, capping it? Like, are you serious?
You're needing liposuction on this government at this point, folks. This is not saying that you're not going to eat chips today. We are at like critical hit the red button moment here.
It's like you dummy three bags of Doritos every night and you say, okay, I'm going to just keep eating three bags of Doritos.
And only that amount. I won't go to four. No,
great this improvement. Is
hanging onto those red pills. What were you going to say, Gage?
I said it seems like a great improvement to stay at those three bags of Doritos, you know, a little tap on the back for the government there.
Dear goodness. All right. Speaking of bureaucrats and bloated wastes of money, do we want to get into an update on the CBC, the government-funded media company?
Take it away, Chris.
Okay. So as of right now, the CBC is getting about $1.4 billion from taxpayers. That's how much they're getting paid out this year. To put that kind of money into perspective, $1.4 billion could otherwise pay the salaries of, say, 7,000 carpenters and 7,000 plumbers. Imagine all those homes they could build. It would be like Super Mario. It would be amazing. So that's the amount of money, 7 plus 7, okay? 14,000 tradesmen and women could be employed for this amount of money. But instead, we're handing it to the CBC, which is government-funded media. Government-funded journalists should be an oxymoron, okay? That is a contradiction in terms. Journalists should never be paid by the government because one of the key roles of a journalist is to speak truth to power. You can't do that if you're counting on the powerful government for your paychecks, kids. But it gets worse. Prime Minister Mark Carney, during the election, like I thought I was having an out-of-body experience, guys. During the election, he's literally talking to reporters, including, I assume, CBC reporters in this scrum. And he says, oh, yeah, I'm going to hand out $150 million more dollars. Here you go. It was just like the Joker at the end of the first Batman movie, flinging money off the back of a parade. The problem here is that it's an obvious contradiction, okay? This conflict of interest is so big, it would cast a shadow on Godzilla, okay? You're a journalist. You're covering an election. Candidate A says he's going to give your employer more money. Candidate B says he's going to cut the money going to your employer. How do you call that straight? So this is the situation we're in right now. The CBC is already getting about $150 million more dollars from Carney. Okay, he's deciding to hand that money out to them. Going forward, though, it could get worse. Because if you go back to the former Heritage Minister, Pascal Saint-Ange, on February 20th, before the election, okay, they were planning, they were advocating to push the CBC funding up to about $2.5 billion. Like almost doubling this thing, adding about a billion and change more, okay, to the graft that the CBC is taking. Further, they want to entrench its funding into statute law. What that means in normal people talk is that the CBC funding will no longer show up as a line item in the budget for them to vote on in the House of Commons every year. They're trying to hide the amount of money that they're going to be getting. They're trying to shield themselves from accountability. Lastly, people might remember the CEO, Catherine Tate. She was the lady that was at committee quite often with the red hair. She got a lot of heat for the fact that she's paid like $500,000 per year, okay? You'd think they would have, you know, read the room and said, you know what, this isn't going so well. Let's knock it down a few notches for the next CEO, start them at a lower pay grade. No, the current new CEO is at the same pay grade as Catherine Tate. She's CEO level 7 of the government Crown Corps for kids watching at home who want to cover this. All that said, nothing's really changed. I did find something funny, though, while I was off work, you guys. I don't know which one of you guys covered this. They announced they're going to get rid of the executive bonuses, but just increase their pay. That's cute. So what happened? Do we know?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, first of all, Yeah, they said they would end the bonuses, but don't worry to all the CBC bureaucrats, managers, and executives. They're just going to adjust the salaries upward to compensate for no more bonus. So, like, that doesn't sound to me like they're listening to Canadians.
No.
That doesn't sound to me like the CBC is saving taxpayers' money. That sounds to me like the CBC is just trying to duck accountability and avoid a bad press day. And, you know, Chris, the funny thing that stuck out to me also in your little rant there, which was great, was it gets worse. Sometimes I feel like that should be the name of this podcast, right? Oh, wait, there's more bad news. But you're right, Chris. I mean, it's a complete waste of money. There's such an obvious conflict of interest for any journalist to be paid by the government, let alone to have this $1 billion plus dollar government media organization. I mean, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I will point out to a lot of our listeners and viewers, you know, I think they're probably more on like the freedom-y side, right-ish, you know, side of the spectrum, just going out on a limb here. It wouldn't matter, okay, if you're looking at the CBC and you're like, oh, they're left-wing, they're woke, okay, fine. It wouldn't matter if Rex Murphy, God rest his soul, were reading the news and Don Cherry was reading the sports. Journalists still should not be paid by the government.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a fundamental issue of principle. Okay, would I enjoy watching that newscast more? Yeah, probably. But it's still wrong, again, for journalists to be on government payroll for exactly the reason we just explained. Gage, I was still surprised you just edited one of my columns on this. I went back and checked their latest ratings. It's still the CBC News World, okay, that is their flagship news channel that's on TV, okay? Their primetime share is 1.8%, okay? That means of the available television viewers in Canada who are watching TV at that time, they get a share of 1.8%. This is according to the CBC's own documents. That means that 98% of Canadians are choosing to watch something else. Were you surprised by how few people are watching this thing?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, that it actually was a little bit surprising. As a somewhat younger guy, I don't exactly watch a lot of TV news most of the time. So when you sent that over, I was like, "That, you know, Chris, I trust you on a lot of stuff, but I'm going to click this link to check sure, to make sure that number is right." And I did, and I was like, 1.8%. They're getting over $1 billion a year from taxpayers, and the best they can manage is less than two. It was nuts, and then we checked it, so it... Yeah, it's actually flabbergasting to think about it. It's so low, despite how much money from taxpayers they have at their disposal.
Yep. CBC is a huge waste of money. Next to nobody is watching it, and journalists shouldn't be paid by the government. So we need to end this thing. So, folks, are we ready for our taxpayer pro tip?
We are. Take it away, Gage.
Okay, give her.
Yeah, well, mine isn't probably too much of a surprise. It's a quick shout out to Prime Minister Mark Carney to finally end the government's gun ban and confiscation scheme. It's been 5 years. Gun crime has increased. It's not working. And it's set to waste billions of taxpayer dollars again on a program that won't work. If you're serious about being a new prime minister and delivering actual results, one of the quickest ways to get a real result is to scrap that and focus on stopping illegal smuggling of guns from across the border.
Good one, Franco.
I had another one, but then I just remembered something that was absolutely disgusting. Made me want to throw up. Ontario Premier Doug Ford and the Ontario government.
Oh,
those politicians are giving themselves a 35% pay raise. A 35% pay raise. Okay. Plus, they're bringing back the pension for those Ontario politicians. Disgusting. A 35% raise plus adding in a pension. Awful, awful. Oh, okay. For a backbencher, one of those provincial politician backbenchers, their raise is about 40 grand. The premier, gosh. Doug Ford, is giving himself a $73,000 pay raise, about a $70,000 pay raise. That's like more than what the average worker makes in an entire year.
Yep.
Like, my taxpayer pro tip, whatever you want to call it, is seriously, Ford government, you're giving yourself a massive raise, lining your pockets, putting your interests above taxpayers. Gross.
Totally gross. And I will point out, they sure as hell did not campaign on this during their very recent election.
Sure didn't.
You know, funny, it wasn't knock, knock, hi. You know, I'm a hardworking member of provincial parliament. They call them MPPs there in Ontario for us Westerners. And I deserve a pay raise. Like, vote for me and give me a pay raise. In the category of things that never happened, Alex, right? That never happened. But here they are handing themselves right up at that trough, man. It reminded me of Brave New World. I even posted a little gif of a cartoon from Brave New World where the pigs learn to stand up on their hind hooves and they're wearing their little butler uniforms. It was gross. So, and pro tip, this isn't the last you're going to hear about this issue on this podcast. No, 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 no. We will eventually do a big on deep dive on what's happening with that Ford government in Ontario, because it is wasting a ton of money and it is taking more money from taxpayers. My red pill, okay? Here's my taxpayer pro tip. I'm speaking to all of our listeners and viewers right now who are kind of wondering, okay, what do we fight now? We get it, okay? Here's the thing. The politicians are feeling the same way, okay? Those members of parliament in Ottawa, they're wondering what they're going to do next, even if they're on the government side, because they've got a very slim minority in there right now. So they're thinking, okay, what do we do next? Keep up the pressure, okay? Keep phoning, keep emailing, keep speaking directly to your member of parliament. Give them your top three things that are voting issues for you. So things like cutting government waste, reducing the bureaucracy, in this case, canceling the gun confiscation. Whatever speaks loudest to you, you've got to take that red pill. You've got to keep the hope alive. You have to keep pushing them, because that's the only way that we're going to get change. Plus, it's fun. You get a sense of fellowship. And the way to get that sense of fellowship is to join the Tax Fighter Army. So go to our website, taxpayer.com, click on the petitions link, scroll down. I know there's a lot of them there. Find something that speaks to you. If you want to defund the media, okay? If you want to get rid of the industrial carbon tax, whatever it is, sign up. And now, bingo, bango, you're on the taxpayer army list. And the next time it's time to bombard a politician and say, time to change, bud, you're going to be part of that standing army. Franco, Gage, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for listening, folks. Be sure to tune in next time where we're fighting for taxpayers.
And let us know how much you think the gun confiscation boondoggle is going to cost.
Yeah,
were the liberals right when they said 200 million? Is it more likely 2 billion, 6.7 billion? How many billions, folks? Just the number.
Settle this bet between all of us here. Leave a comment on YouTube, Rumble, however you're watching. We're going to go through the comments and we're going to read your most entertaining comments on the next show. Till next time.